Wow, it's already been a great service this morning, hasn't it been, with the commissioning of the Mexico team? I just love our church. This is just awesome. Thank you, worship team. And it's just great. Yesterday, Pop-Up Wonder Fair, how many were there? Man, wasn't that a great time and just a blessing to the community. It was just awesome. So we're going to talk this morning, continue our series about following the cloud as we talk about overcoming our fears as we follow the cloud. I remember when I was a kid, I was afraid of the dark, and so when I walk up the stairs at night or whatever, I would walk up backwards because I was just afraid the boogeyman or something was going to get me, you know. I remember also as a kid, I was afraid of squirrels. I mean, squirrel sounds kind of strange thing to be afraid of, but we used to, where I grew up in Hickson Drive in Kitchener, we had some bird feeders in the back. And the squirrels used to come in and take the bird food out of there. And my dad would get mad at the squirrels. And so he'd take stones and he would huck them at the squirrels. And I always thought, the squirrels are someday going to take revenge upon us, because we're throwing stones at them. It would keep me awake at night thinking about that. So I don't know, you know, when you were a kid, you remember what you were afraid of? Anybody want to shout out something you were afraid of when you were a kid? Like I said, for me, it was the dark, squirrels. Anybody else, something else to add to that? Bees? Yeah. Snakes? Yeah. Spiders? Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of things. Clowns? How many are afraid of clowns, you know? Clowns is actually you're laughing. Clowns is actually a common fear among children. So it's, all kinds of things that we're afraid of. You know, now scientists tell us that there's only two fears that we're born with. We're born with the fear of falling, and we're born with the fear of loud noises. That means that every other fear we've learned in life. You know, now that I'm an adult, I'm not afraid of the boogeyman anymore. I'm not afraid of squirrels even. Although the other day at Tim Hortons, I saw a rat, and I was like, oh, okay, that caused me just to step back. So having just moved from Alberta, which is rat-free, or so they say, I'm not afraid of those things anymore, but I have other fears. You know, like my dad had his first stroke when he was 39 years old, and then he had five more strokes until he had his heart attack and passed away. And so now if I see something, you know, on TV about heart disease or heart transplant, I'm changing the channel because it causes some fear within me. I'm fearful for my kids and the future of the world and what will be for them, even as they go to a new high school in September. It's all kinds of things that I have fears, and you do also, right? And some of you, maybe you're fearful for your kids or your grandkids, or maybe some of you have health concerns you're afraid of. You're afraid the night before you're going to the doctor, you're in a state of anxiety about that. Or maybe like we prayed for Pastor Greg and his stepdad passing away. Maybe some of us got a fear of death. And we worry about when it's our time. And Greg just saw his stepdad Thursday night. And Tracy was just telling me Friday morning how well he was doing. And then he passed into eternity. Maybe some of you've got that fear of when you pass into eternity. Maybe some of you, if it's a fear of loneliness. Maybe it's a fear of financial destitution. What if I run out of money? What am I going to do then? Maybe some of you're fearful. What if my life won't count? What if when I pass away, nobody kind of notices? Maybe a fear of failure, like we talked about on Father's Day. Maybe some of you are afraid of embarrassment, like, what if somebody notices or knows some of my deep, dark secrets? Maybe that's a fear you've got. Maybe a fear for personal safety. When we were, my wife and I were inviting people for Pop-Up Wonder Fair yesterday on my street, on our street. And in the first month or so that I've lived there, the number one conversation I seem to be having with neighbors is safety and the block watch on our street. And I used to be a block watch captain in Calgary, and so people are interested in that, and maybe you can help out in that. And so this safety concern, you know, in our area, and the tragic event that happened this week in Cloverdale. And you know, so we've got, you know, safety concerns that perhaps cause fear. And there's all sorts of things that cause us fear. Maybe some of you fear that I will just keep going on with this list of fears, you know. And this, you know, this, you're getting more fearful as the sermon moves on, you know. All kinds of fears we've got. But let's take a look in our Bibles to Exodus chapter 13. Exodus chapter 13. And kids, you've got a activity pack there. Did you get one when you came in? I pulled one out here in case the sermon gets a little boring. I'm going to pull out my crayons here and start coloring, kind of thing. And kids, if you want to use that activity sheet, and Exodus 13 is on there, the same verses we're talking about. And if you show me, kids, one page that you filled in, I've got some candy or something at the back there. I'll give you after church. So Exodus 13, let's pick it up, verse 17. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not leave them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter, for God said if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt armed for battle. That's kind of funny. Here God's done all these miracles. The 10 plagues, and now he's like, oh, better not do another miracle in terms of war, because who knows, you know, the Israelites might cower, they might chicken out, and so he takes them on this roundabout way. Tell you, we want to stick the slide up on the screen, what the map looks like in terms of how they go. You see the Mediterranean Sea up the top there. And that was, highway. It's not a highway by today's condition, but, by today's standards. But it's a road that would have led straight across. It was called the Way of the Sea, or more commonly called the Way of the Philistines. And that would have been kind of the straight shortcut to go. But God, in his infinite wisdom, had them go kind of on that red route there, you know? The God of the roundabout way, instead of going the shorter route that they took this other way. Let's pick it up. Verse 19 has to do with Joseph and his bones. Pick it up, verse 20. After leaving Succoth, they camped at Etham on the edge of the desert. Now, I think that's on the map. I mean, you almost need one of those laser pointer things. Any of you kids got one of those? You know, the things that are illegal in school because you might blind somebody's eyes out. And teachers are always concerned about all the kids having two eyes. And so anybody, any of you kids got one of those at home? Maybe bring it next Sunday and I'll do a trade for a couple chocolate bars or something. Anyways, I promise not to point it this way, though. Succoth, if you see there on the left side there, that would almost be like the edge of the desert and the edge of Egypt. And to me, as I was thinking about it this week, that would be almost kind of like the transition point of leaving Egypt, then going into the wilderness. Okay, next verse, verse 21. By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. So we've got there the cloud. That's our focus this summer, following the cloud. In fact, this was the passage I was going to speak on originally until I found that Numbers passage back at the start of the series where the cloud is mentioned 14 times, two times the perfect number. So here we've got in the Bible the first instance of this cloud being mentioned. That is, the Israelites are on their exodus out of Egypt on into the promised land. The cloud is what guides them. And notice there the writer mentions that the cloud never leaves. The cloud is continually there day and night. This theophany, which is just a fancy word of saying a visible manifestation of the invisible God. So God is showing his presence through the cloud. Okay, let's pick it up in chapter 14. Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Hahirothoth. Sorry, I'm not familiar with that pie. Pie blueberry, I know. Pie apple, I know. Pi Hahirothoth, I don't know that one. Between Migdol and by the sea. They are to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal-Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services." So he had his chariots made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi-Hahiroth, opposite Baal-Zephon. Okay, so we've got a couple things that are happening there. We've got things that are happening on the human level, right? Israelites, they've left. About 2 million plus people have left now Egypt. And so on the human level, suddenly Pharaoh goes, "Oh, these people are gone." And back when Moses had originally attempting to negotiate with Pharaoh, he had said, "Let us go for 3 days out into the desert." And then, you know, all the plagues came and he said, "Okay, we're leaving." Finally, Pharaoh said, "Okay, go," kind of thing. But now Pharaoh has this change of mind. He's realizing his workforce is gone. I've got to do something. And so he gets his charioteers and his officials and begins to pursue them. So we've got that happening on the human level. And then on the God level, of course, we've got God speaking to Moses, telling the people, "Hey, I want you to go." You know, and we've got God directing the affairs. And we've got some phrases in there that for us in the modern mind, they might come across kind of strange. Like, what do you do with the verse that says, "And God hardened Pharaoh's heart"? It's hard for us to get our head around, right? You know, and again, on the God level, we can think, well, God can do whatever he wants to do. God is sovereign, right? And on the human level, obviously, Pharaoh has choices he can make, you know, in terms of hardening his own heart. And as I was thinking about it this week, I thought, what if Pharaoh had decided, "No, I'm just going to let the Israelites go. I'm not going to pursue them"? Would the story have ended differently? Would Pharaoh have stayed alive because he chose not to pursue? Now, obviously, we're kind of reading between the lines there in the scripture. But like I said, we've got things happening on the human level. We've also got things happening on the God level. And that's obviously kind of an oversimplification of an answer. But it's not what the text is about. And so I'm not going to deal with that anymore. Some Sunday, we'll get into that more, you know, in terms of free will, in terms of God's sovereignty. And what do we do with verses like, you know, God gaining glory out of the Egyptians being swept into the water. But like I said, we won't grapple with that today. But we've got here God doing the leading. Verse 1 of what I read there. "Tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near those names." Why don't we stick the next map up on the slide there. How many of you live in a cul-de-sac? I live in a cul-de-sac now. Okay, there's a number of us that live in a cul-de-sac. The Israelites find themselves in a cul-de-sac. They've got the mountains on one side. They've got the Red Sea ahead of them. And they've got Pharaoh and his angry army pursuing them from the back. There is no place for them to go in this cul-de-sac. But the good news is, of course, God is going to make a way. And that's the good news for you and I also. When we find ourselves in a cul-de-sac, when we're wondering, where do I turn? When we think we're out of options, got a mountain over here, Red Sea over here, there's no way I can go. God will make a third way. God will open a door for you. Even when we find ourselves in this place, the place that the Israelites find themselves in, a place of fear. Let's take a look at the next verses. Verse 10. "As Pharaoh approached and the Israelites looked up, and there were Egyptians marching after them, they were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, 'Was it because there are no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert.'" Bring out the violins, eh? Oh, man. That's what fear will do, right? When you and I are fearful, then we lose perspective. We focus upon our fears. We focus upon our problems instead of focusing upon the Lord. That's what's happening to the Israelites here. Their fear has taken over. What does it do? Well, it makes them cynical. What did I just read there? Verse 11. Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us out here in the desert to die? They're just being so sarcastic there in what they're saying to Moses. Historians I read this week tell us that in Egypt at this time, 3/4 of the land was used for graves. It was just a massive graveyard there. So they're being totally sarcastic to Moses here. Totally cynical. The second thing that fear will cause us to do, it will cause us to blame. Again, what do? They say to Moses, they say, what have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, it's better to serve the Egyptians? Suddenly they've shifted. I'm sure they never said those things when they were back in Egypt making those bricks. But suddenly, again, fear takes over. It's like, you, Moses, it's your fault. And suddenly the accusations start. Third thing that fear does for us, it has us go living back in the past. Verse 12, it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Oh, I can hear it already. Remember the good old days. Remember back in Egypt. Yeah, remember, you know, when we were serving Pharaoh. The good old days? Those weren't good old days. You were in forced labor. People were dying left and right. Like I said, massive graveyards back then. But sometimes we savor the past. Why? Because it's what we know. It's that known commodity. Whereas when we step out in faith, when we're unsure, when we've got to take that place of trust, or like Pastor Chris challenged us so well last week, to step forward in obedience, and we don't know where that's going to take us, that when it becomes uncertain. And so we tend to start looking in the rearview mirror. But the reality is we can't go forward if we're looking in the rearview mirror. But sometimes, yeah, we'll avoid the promised land because it's unknown, and fear will keep us back. But I appreciate so much Moses' reaction there in verse 13. He doesn't cower to the fears. He doesn't succumb to them, but he confidently answers. Verse 13, Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." When you and I follow the cloud, we need to follow the cloud by letting go of our fears, by letting go of our fears. Notice he tells them that, verse 13, he answers the people. The first thing he says is, do not be afraid. Some of your translations say, fear not. To not be afraid, to let go of that fear. How do you and I let go of our fears? By reminding ourselves that we're not in control, that God is in control, right? And when we have that assurance, we have that confidence knowing God is sovereign, that we can let go of the fear. Realizing that God will guide our lives. Again, verse 1 that I read, he's the one who led them into this cul-de-sac that they were on. Or even the first verse I read back in chapter 13, verse 17, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country. God is the one who guided them. God is the one who directed them. The same is true in your life and mine. When we find ourselves in that cul-de-sac, we find ourselves in a bad space. God's not up there wringing his hands, going, oh no, what am I going to do now in Rick's life? No, even if it's my poor choices, or if it's God sovereignly leading me, or somehow those two working together, God will make a way. You and I need to let go of that need to control, and trust that he will open the door. He will make a way for us. Sometimes he'll do the miracle and just kind of calm the storm. But sometimes God doesn't calm the storm, right? He calms the child. And he walks us through that storm. So let it go. Why don't you turn to the person beside you, just say those three words, let it go. Some of you, that's more than three words there. I thought maybe somebody was going to start singing that Frozen song, Let It Go, Let It Go. Okay, secondly, not only do we need to let go of our fears, but we need to look up to God. We need to look up to God. Again, notice what Moses says to the people there. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Need only to be still, which is a hard thing to do, right? For some of us. Some of us, we feel we got to solve the problem. We got to fix it, you know? And we think, oh, you know, if it's meant to be, it's up to me kind of thing. But God through Moses calls the people to be still, which I think is kind of funny in this situation because they had nowhere to go, right? The natural tendency is sometimes to run. Rod mentioned earlier about the family in Mexico and the father, the husband leaving that family situation. How many times in my life have I seen that men abandon a family, abandon a situation, that our temptation is to run when we've got fears? But for the Israelites back then, there was nowhere to run. The only thing in that cul-de-sac is they could kind of run in circles kind of thing, which is what some of us do sometimes when we're running, right? We're just kind of going in circles because we got nowhere to go. And God is looking down and he's saying to us, be still, to be still. Rather than looking around, rather than looking at our problems, rather than looking at our circumstances, to look up. God is going to make a way. He's been faithful in the past. He'll be faithful to us in the future. Verse 14 in your Bible, take a look at it. I think we've got it up on the screen there. Yeah, the last two words, I'm using the NIV this morning. It says, be still. What do you got in your Bible there? The last two words of verse 14. Shout it out, sorry. Stay calm. Okay, you got stay calm. What else you got in your Bible? Be silent. Yeah. Anything else? Keep your mouth shut. Okay, yeah. We're laughing. That's from the Message, right? Yeah, that's from the Message. That's actually the most accurate translation. It's two Hebrew words that are used there that literally mean shut up, you know? And so the NIV and some of the other translations, they're kind of, you know, making it soft. Be still, you know, what else we got? Hold your peace. You won't need a lift of finger, but yeah, shut up is actually the literal translation there. So some of us sometimes, we need to just shut up. We need to just be still. We need to not talk, need to not move, and just look up to God and let Him direct and guide and lead. Turn to the person beside you, say those two words, look up. Okay, and the next verse. Verse 15. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh and his chariots and his horsemen. Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other side, so neither went near the other all night long. And then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all the night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. So we've got the third thing. When you and I are following the cloud, not only do we need to let go of our fears, not only do we need to look up to God, but there's a time also to launch out, a time to move forward, right? There's a time to be still. There's a time to wait on God. And there's also a time to move forward. I like how the Living Bible translates that. Verse 15, stop praying and start moving. And there's a time that God says to some of us, stop praying and start moving. To move forward, that faith is a verb. It's an action word. Faith is a muscle. It's got to be exercised. And often for us in moving forward, it takes our participation, right? Spiritual formation generally takes our participation in some ways. I mean, sometimes I pray with people and boom, God delivers, God rescues a person, God sets a person free. But often it's the prayers combined with certain things happening in their life, certain actions and choices that they make that result in freedom. But it's ultimately God's work. It's not self-work. It's not self-made effort. Why don't we stick a tally up on the screen there, verse 13. And do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord you will bring you today. That word deliverance in the Bible is the Hebrew word Yeshua. Everybody say Yeshua. Okay, take a look in your Bible at verse 13. What have you got there instead of the word deliverance? Somebody got something different there? Rescue, some of you have rescue, New Living Translation has rescue. Somebody else? Salvation, yeah. So bring the Yeshua, the salvation, the rescue, the deliverance that God will do. See, God is the one who does it, right? This story, the story of the Exodus, of following the cloud here, is a story of rescue. It's not a story of escape. This isn't Shawshank Redemption happening here, you know, and the Israelites are figuring out some clever, ingenious way to build a tunnel underneath the Red Sea, and God kind of blesses their efforts in doing that. No, it's not self-effort at all. It's not a bridge that the Israelites construct. It's God opening up the Red Sea and the people of Israel walking through that Red Sea. And see, friends, we can choose religion. And religion says, it's up to us. Religion says, you got to make a way. Religion says, build the bridge, build the tunnel. But the gospel, and if we're gospel people as Grace Point Church, the gospel says, God has already made the way. God is the one who opens the Red Sea. And when we look at the New Testament writers and what they say about this Exodus account, they always talk about it in the past tense, applying it to us as people of the new covenant. For example, John says in John 5 that we have crossed over from death to life. It's not that something we attempt to do. It's not something we try and achieve to do. God has already done it for us. Do you understand what kind of a difference this makes in our lives? That when it comes to, let's say, facing down fears, I don't have to try and psych myself up enough. I don't have to somehow get to a certain level of faith. That if I just have enough faith, then I can make a way here. You know, or when we're in a certain situation, we're thinking, oh, I'm stuck in this cul-de-sac. If I have enough prayer power somehow to do it, that I'll psych myself up and then God will make a way. No, God has already made a way, and He takes the faith that we have, the impure faith that we have, and He's the one who opens the Red Sea for us. See, the power in prayer isn't in the one who says it. The power in prayer is in the one who answers it. That's why I'm not afraid to pray for people all the time, whatever state I'm in. Obviously, I try and purify my heart as much as I can. But again, the power is in Him who answers it. That's what makes a difference. Again, if we're gospel people, we believe that. So Wednesday night, I couldn't sleep at all. I don't know what happened. If I had some caffeine or something in the evening, and I couldn't sleep. I was sleepless in Surrey, you know. There I was, just laying on my bed, you know. And as I'm laying there, I'm kind of thinking about my message. And I'm thinking about the people of Israel walking through the Red Sea. And often, you know, like in, you know, movies, it's kind of depicted, or in Sunday school pictures, it's like an opening in the Red Sea, like this middle aisle, which doesn't make sense. This is 2 million people. You know, that thing's going to be like a mile or two wide, this opening, you know. And so I was picturing, you know, as I was sleepless there, I was just picturing Wednesday night, just all the people kind of walking through, you know, just, you know, throngs of people, you know. And I was thinking about the people walking, because everybody's got a unique walk. You notice that? Like, you know, my wife, if she were to have heels on and I were to turn around, I could know if she was walking towards me. You know, she's got a certain gait to her walk, and everybody's got a certain way of walk. And so I was picturing these Israelites kind of walking through. And so I was picturing, you know, kind of in my head, I was calling her kind of Katie, you know, catwalk Katie. she's kind of walking through, you know. She's kind of doing her walk, you know. She's a rich Jewish girl, you know. She's got the skinny jeans. She's got the coach purse, you know. And as she's walking through, kind of like she's walking a catwalk, she's worried about her pumps, you know, getting muddy, you know, as she's walking. And as she's walking through, she's going like this. Egyptians, you know. She's just kind of doing her walk, and she's sticking her tongue out at Pharaoh, you know. And that's Kitty Walk Hero. Does she have faith? Yeah, she's got faith. It's faith mixed with conceit. It's faith mixed with arrogance. But yeah, she's got faith. You know? As I'm staring at the ceiling, I'm thinking about another guy. Maybe, you know, the business type. You know, see him down in the business district of Vancouver. You know, got the briefcase and got the smartphone and just kind of doing the power walking, you know. And I kind of was picturing, you know, power walker Paul kind of walking through. And he's got lots going on in his mind as he's just kind of walking through the Red Sea. Does Paul have faith? Yeah, he's got faith. He's got faith mixed with a whole bunch of other thoughts and things going on. And I was thinking about another Israelite. I thought, you know, there's some people probably walking through, kind of going like this. They're looking at the wall of water, and they're kind of worried. Is this thing going to come down on us? They're looking back at the Egyptians, thinking, man, they're gaining on us. They're getting closer. And I thought of somebody, you know, maybe let's call her Anxious Annie, you know. She's kind of looking around. She's worried about this thing. She stops halfway through to have a smoke break, you know. She's got to calm her nerves, you know, because her nerves are just getting to her with this wall of water. And Anxious Annie, does she have faith? Yeah, she's got faith. She's got faith combined with worry and anxiety. And then I was thinking about the kids, you know, as the kids are walking through, you know. And I was thinking, you know, kids, how would they be reacting to this? And I was thinking about like the junior high boys, you know, they'd be kind of sliding along there, you know. And I could see them just sticking their hand in that wall of water, you know, and splashing their sisters with the water as they're walking through. And I could see them, you know, saying, hey, look, a shark in there, you know, as they're walking along, you know. And so we got, you know, Sliding Sam just kind of walking through, you know. And we got all kinds of people, these Israelites. Does Sam have faith? Yeah, he's got faith. You know, they all have faith. But it's not their faith that opened up the wall of water, right? It's God's faithfulness. And you and I, as people of faith, we don't muster up our faith, but we rest in His great faithfulness. He is the one who opened the way. As we sang the songs today, songs of the cross, songs of Christ's resurrection, what He has done for us, and we move forward as gospel people in that. Regardless of your faith level, my faith level, God will come through for us. So what does God want to say to you through this story this morning? For some of us, maybe we're at a point of decision making. Maybe we've been choosing religion. We've been trying to build our own bridge. We've been trying to make our own way. And God's saying today, go my way. I'm the one who's opened the way. Come through me, through what I've done for you on the cross. Maybe for some of us this morning, He's calling us to move forward, to launch out, to stop praying. And maybe we just need to take that step of risk, even this week. Maybe for some of us, man, as I just initially talked about fears, I could have talked a lot more and would have hit home for a lot of us. Some of us, the phobias just kind of overwhelm us. The fears turn into panic attacks, turn into anxiety attacks. And maybe today God is saying, just let go and look up to me. I don't know what God wants to say to you, but I believe He wants to take this story from 3,500 years ago and apply it into each of our lives. So I want to invite the worship team up to the front to lead us in our closing song, I Will Follow. And maybe the prayers, if you want to go to the side walls again, and maybe some of us, we're at a decision-making point. We're choosing on something, whether it's a way of God, whether it's letting go of our fears, whether it's launching out, whatever it may be, to let God speak to us. Because God is ultimately the one who brings us here, who does the good work in our lives.